that's how I get affection at the end.
Velkommen til. How many of you do actually work on the Windows Azure platform or know the concepts of it? Just to raise your hands. I think we're like 50% of the people here. Cool, because I pretty much take it for given that you at least know the concept of the Windows Azure platform and would actually just love to build on top of that knowledge and give you the input that I, a year ago, would have loved to get. Going into the Windows Azure platform, I had like multiple questions regarding what will this thing do to my application, can I port it, are my development process going to be different. So hopefully in an hour you'll have my take on that. I just want to kick this thing off with we're doing some background on. There we go. Doing some background on me and on why this whole thing came into place and what I've been up for the last year. I'm a technical manager at a company called Sitecore. And as a technical manager there, I'm responsible for the area of third-party integration, third-party tooling, whatever is out there in the field, and making sure that we do have a strategy, that we connect to the services, connect to the software, connect to the vendors, which will add values to our software base. Along comes Windows Azure, and that actually is something that's very intriguing for us as a web-based system. So one of the things that I've been working on for the past year is what we call Sitecore Azure, and that is an application which more or less streamlines the process of moving your Sitecore solution onto the Windows Azure cloud. So been doing that for the last year, and been having to work with that and done numerous different things. We started up at a point where the number of articles on best practices on the web were very, very few. So pretty much just been trying to convert and bringing our application online by trial and error. So hopefully you'll get a bit better point of starting after watching this. So building on Windows Azure and going into that whole process, I was standing there initially with questions like these, like any architectural considerations that I need to be aware of. You guys just saw, if you were in the room when Cameron was here earlier, he did a great talk about all of these architectural things that you had to come into when doing cloud computing. I was sitting there with a knowledge base of almost zero on cloud computing and having to catch up on that. And I knew that this was a beast that took some changes and took some stuff to my architecture in order to get this up and running correctly. How about all of my building process? So building on this thing, making sure that my building environment, my building process, development process, is that going to change? What impacts will it have on my process when this is now something that I need to do in a foreign location like the Windows Azure Cloud? Scale endlessly. That's one of the reasons why going to the cloud is that now you got all the hardware or as many pieces of hardware that you can consume, but that definitely needs some kind of architectural changes or a architecture that handles this. So going into this and thinking, What the heck do I need to be aware of? And finally, what are the difficulties of converting my application hands-on? So just to set the context, I just want to do a brief overview of what our application really is and how it lives in its basic form. So we're building an enterprise content management system. If you want to put that in simple, that's pretty much just we're creating content on the web. We're creating an application that can manage and maintain your content on the website. And that comes in multiple different flavors, like shops, like company web pages. All that you can probably figure is buildable on an application like ours. The application is by heart designed for endless scaling. So scaling isn't something new for us. We've been doing on-premise scaling for a long time. We've been data center scaling. But this is all on what we would call regular Windows 2008 machinery or something similar to that. Our software do by default support that you can run on multiple servers. It does support that you can run on multiple geolocations. So none of these things are actually new for us, but the whole cloud computer and the whole cloud aspect of this is actually brand new. So just going through the talk that Cameron did, one of the things that he stated was the most difficult thing is keeping all of your local instances of the data up to date, if you're having all your information there, making sure that every realm that you've created in different parts of the world, that all of these are in sync, that you can publish to them, handling all of that. This is something that Sitecore, or is a very fundamental thing in Sitecore, and we do have a lot of different models for this. The simplest one is what we call a push-forward model, where pretty much all of the content that, for instance, is being created on your master editorial server will be pushed to all of your content delivery servers. So this is a model that all data inside of Sitecore lives under. So just to give you like the overall architectural considerations of going into the cloud and going into distributed computing in general. Running on Windows Azure, you're running on commodity hardware. So that whole level that we had like the ability to scale up nowadays, or the ability to set hardware requirements as a software vendor, just doesn't cope anymore. You're running on off-the-shelf hardware. You're sharing it with other users. So it's you even got less than commodity hardware. So pretty much that whole scale-up philosophy, that's gone as soon as you want to move into the Windows Azure platform. That makes it so that everything or anything that you build has to be scalable. So instances of websites, instances of web roles, worker roles, all of that stuff has to multiply. And the easiest way of doing so is pretty much making sure that everything doesn't have state. Now, state gives you a lot of benefits in many areas, so that is something that will be worked on. But you tend to find that you go into this thing wanting to creating it stateless and rather have more math to be done than actually keeping state. One of the reasons why we chose, and what I found really interesting with the Windows Azure platform, is the whole thing of multi-geo locations. So the fact that I can have my website everywhere in the world, or at least currently in the 6 data centers that Microsoft are having, with the same hassle as I would if I had to do it in a single instance. So pretty much when I get into this model of being able to deploy to a data center, I for free get all of the other 5. And data centers are growing in new locations. So by the whole thing of, or the thought of keeping things stateless, like website stateless, like worker roles stateless, we do get to a point where we want to have some data that is either transitional or is like one unit of data that cannot be cached. And these are a problem because these do really scale badly. If you want to have that single transitional lock, this is some of the stuff that you need to take into consideration on how to work with that. More or less, I found myself bound to the point where my database became my throughput bottleneck. I could add as many web servers or web roles in front of my solution, but at some point, either the transitional or the throughput of the database became my problem. We'll get back to that later. I have been mentioning the term web role a couple of times. For those of you who doesn't know the Windows Asia platform, pretty much just associate that with the website for now. Then we'll get back into depth with the details and the differentiators on those. So a typical setup for a Sitecore solution probably looks something like this, where we got what we define as a content production server setup. And in its simplest form, a content production server setup is a database and a website. On that website runs an application on which you can maintain your data in the database. The Sitecore application, by heart, is 100% data stored in the database. So all variable data is stored within the database. So in front of that and stands like in 9 out of 10 cases, a firewall and a page delivery environment. So the actual data that is giving in public is being handled by different servers than the editorial servers. I have two in the drawings here, meaning that this is the normal area of where you would expand your system if you're going from small to medium size setups. You will be adding another web servers, which will be running on that database in the page delivery environment. So just to go back to that push forward information, or push forward of our information while publishing of data, that is pretty much just data that's being moved from one database to the public database. So we are pretty much just moving those items of information to another database server, and now they're public available. So bringing the Windows Azure Cloud into this realm and the setup of this, one of the things that makes a very easy swap when you look at this is pretty much whatever you got outside of your firewall, let's just replace that with the Azure platform. It's public anyways. When you send it out there, it's public information. So there is no security breaches. When you publish your information, you're pretty much going live with it anyway. So bringing in the Azure platform there instead got us to this next point. So deploying to the Windows Azure platform, starting a year ago, that was tooling. You had to build your packages. You got to go into Visual Studio. You got to create a package. Some different setup for that. But me wanting to do high conversion of existing customers and being able to have developers out there that were actually able to build on the cloud, even though they didn't have any specific cloud knowledge, they should be able to move small solutions onto the cloud. We came up with the idea of actually making the content production server itself able to create web roles, to be able to create Azure specific databases. So we're at a point right now where the server standing as a content management server in your organization, you can add an application to that, which is the Sitecore Azure. This application is able to build web role instances of that website and Azure specific databases containing your data, and transferring and moving that onto the cloud automatically. So after doing so, we're pretty much in the same place as we were before. Now we've got a different environment. It's a Windows Azure environment. But the process is the same. When we have started up these instances and they are running, we can publish our content just as we did before. And we can run this in the same fashion as we did. Now we're running on Windows Azure machines instead. So hopefully this should run just as good as when we were running on traditional Windows 2008 boxes. So automated deployment, pretty much what it does in a nutshell is it creates the cloud databases, it sets up the databases in the cloud, moves the data to that instance, it sets up this new instance as a publishing target, so you can now publish to the cloud instance, converts the existing website, moves that to the cloud, start up those instances, and configures those instances to run on the databases next to it in the cloud. So just for the looks of it, this is a screenshot from inside of our administration application. How the Sitecore administration application comes in different flavors. One of them is a desktop-based web application, so you get a full Windows-like desktop. It's a bit blurry here. Actually, it's totally unreadable. And there should be standing Sitecore Azure. So pretty much what you're doing is you are opening up this application. When opening it up, you get a view of the world, a map with dots in all of the Azure locations. And deploying to that instance is pretty much just clicking on it, and it should here state create content deployment environment. And doing so actually just brings you to a nice, should state 20 minutes of looking at that progress bar going from left to right, what we developers have been doing for years. So 20 minutes later, all of this is spun up. We are in that situation where we talked earlier. So this is the Sitecore Azure application, just automating that whole thing, making sure that your deployment towards the web is simply just clicks. All this stuff regarding stating, regarding creation of instances, regarding maintaining size, all of that stuff that is doable through my UI interface. It's also doable through the portal. But more interestingly, it is doable through the REST APIs that is associated with the Windows Azure platform. So when you're going into this as a developer, you'll be spending probably some time uploading. You'll probably find yourself spending deploying, redeploying instances on a frequent basis in order to test. It is well worth the time to automate this because it is a process that takes some time. I would say a deployment of an instance would take something like 20 minutes. And you're waiting on that, and probably your installment process is multiple steps that need to be executed in a certain row. So getting that in there, getting it in your build environment or such is really worth the effort and will save you many hours. So, web roles. I put this association earlier between a web role being more or less a website, which isn't completely true. Think of a web role as a package which is installable on an ISS server. So pretty much the idea of you putting together whatever content that your website should have and putting that into a compressed file and being able to upload that single file and getting that executed and up and running on X number of instances. So because you have to package everything into this package, there are some limitations to what you can do that you normally would be able to do on a web server. Number one, if you want to be true scalable, this package should be able to run in one or multiple instances. You should be able to reconfigure the number of this running. You shouldn't do any specific configuration towards the individual instances. Since we are running on a platform as a service, your instances can be spun up and spun down at any given moment. So, for instance, if you're running on a server which is being crowded, so the load of all the tenants are getting high, you're probably being moved. So your web instance can actually be spun down and a new one spun up. They make sure to spin up another one before they spin it down. So you always have the minimum of instances which you have paid for. But it can be spun up and spun down and moved to different hardware. That also means that either though you actually can write in your website role and write inside of the website folder, you really shouldn't do so due to the fact that at any point this data will be deleted and you'll be spun up a new server. Whatever state you saved there or whatever you had there, that will be gone. So the whole missing of IO is something that you got to take into consideration when building your web roles. Second thing is that everything runs inside of the web role instance. So you cannot contact anything, any file resources on the OS. You cannot use legacy code like COM objects, all that stuff. You need to be pure .NET. So if you have a current application which jumps on some of these points, you need to go get that figured before you actually are able to start trying on moving to the Windows Azure platform. Looking at us, this was actually one of the easiest steps. We got what seems to be 31 megs of compiled for code. I just ran through the bin directory, selected whatever were there, and it seems to be like 31 megs. Say half of it is code that we've written. The second half is code that are third-party vendor code. So going into this whole process of bringing not only my code, but third-party vendors up there was a bit of exciting, and seeing whatever the state on that is. We do by default support the whole thing of multiple instances. This is something that we've been running for years. So, and the realm is pretty much the same whether you run on Windows Azure boxes or you want to run on Windows 2008 boxes or similar. And if you want to scale, you got to be able to run on multiple instances of them. We are not stateless, but our web roles are able to recreate their state, which actually puts us into that same image. If an instance spins up on another machine, it will go and do whatever work in order to get realigned with the state that it should be in at that given moment. We got a lot of architecture behind that, which is very specific for us, and I'm sure with the systems that you guys are running, that will be very specific for your guys' business cases also. Bottom line was, to my big surprise, moving the web roles up there required me to do no lines changes. So whatever you find in a regular sidecar box or installation will be the same thing running on the Windows Azure Cloud. There are, of course, some changes to the configuration specifically done and to the databases, all that stuff. But other than that, you are actually able to run that full 30 megs of compiled code on the Windows Azure Cloud. And this is stuff like RAT controls. I think there is different other vendors in there. Haven't paid any attention to it at all. Everything went through quality testing as usual. Databases, though, is something different, and this was where we had to put in our effort. And if you recall that slide that I had with the four issues, that your database will probably be a bottleneck due to it being where you're transitional, due to it being where you do have a lot of injury. And I want to show you some of the stuff that we have done and stuff that we're currently considering in doing. We're just gone public with this first release of the software. We got numerous different things that we want to add to the product. will debate some of the stuff that we're currently investigating. But I will also show off some of the stuff that we've found as initial bottlenecks and which we have found to work with in order to do this. So going into the whole databases in Windows Azure databases, one of the first thing that pops into mind is you must use clustered indexes on all tables. That means that your data ordering is actually sorted by your public key. For us, that isn't really too smart all the time. We do have a lot of stuff that's just ordered by GUID. We probably don't want to rearrange if we add another instance of that. But we're forced to doing so. And this does have some specific additional load to the databases in a Windows Azure environment. One of the things that came to a big surprise for me was the fact that when you get a subscription for Windows Azure, you're able to deploy multiple web instances, multiple instances all over the world. But when you go to the database and say, I want to create a database, you get to do a selection of location, and you only get a single database per subscription. So me wanting to go fully geo location, for that, it is very important for us to actually have the database nearby. We want to move that data or replicate or maintain that data in that geolocation from a central place, and that's what we're doing with our push-forward publishing flow. Actually gave us that problem that the whole thing is that now we need to have a central database, and we're probably going to have some latency between our web roles and that database. And this is at a point where we don't want to have latency at all. We want to keep that as close to 0 milliseconds as possible. So one of the things that we found ourselves doing was every time we add a location, we add another Windows Azure subscription. So behind the scenes where you see 6 dots, either though you could place web roles in all of those dots on a single subscription, we actually use 6 Windows Azure subscriptions where there is a database server, a web role server on each of those instances. So more subscription pretty easily solved that issue. Having databases in different regions and being a system that normally handled it and normally handles merging data and setting up data, we by default, or in our on-premise setups or regular setups, use database replication. That's just not an option on Windows Azure. And it probably isn't going to be within the next half year. They're working on getting there. They got something like database copy right now. They got something like cloning databases. But it'll never be a replication model. There is sync options. Although the timing of sync is a bit longer than replication, these tools might help you in some areas. They didn't pull the trick for us. Wasn't too big an issue, though, due to the fact that we already got a publishing engine. We already got a setup that is able to manage this, and that we are running on that instead of using database replication, due to the fact that you might want to have different data in your different data stores. So you might only want to have the US English version on the US server, and you might only want to have the Chinese version in the Chinese web servers. Although you could populate everything to all servers, you can in our system actually specify what data you want to have where. So we are currently ourselves taking care of syncing all of that. This is something that you will definitely need to have focus on if you want to do geo multi-locations. Database size limitations. I've heard this multiple times. My database can be 50 gigabytes at max on Windows Azure. A question which has been raised upon me multiple times, And a question which I find a bit funny, because one of the initial slides actually stated that everything should scale. And if you want to be truly scalable, you have to spin up something else. And if you want to have scalability in database throughput, you need to work with that whole concept of a single database. But there is a database size limitation there. So having converted this, having redone my indexes, having redone the public keys, all of that specific stuff, for which if any of you has to go through this public or this process, there actually is a tool on CodePlex, which I even use myself, which will actually analyze your database and pretty much try to do a conversion of your database and say that, hey, instead of this SQL syntax, you should probably rewrite your keys to do something like this or set up. I'm not saying that you guys should just run a fully automated redo of this, but it will give you some pointers to where you need to look into your database schema. From there on, I'll probably emphasize that you take it upon your quest yourself. There might be stuff that you need to reconsider schema-wise. Latency was one of the first problems that occurred when we initially got this system up and running. And the funny thing is, my first deployment, that took forever. And when I mean forever, that is plus a day to deploy. So this first thing was I looked at, I got like 800,000 SQL calls when I'm deploying. That just took a heck of a lot of time to execute, 24 hours or something. But though when it was up there, the database that was running with web role just alongside of it or within the same database actually ran as expected. Low latency, nice throughput from the databases, so everything was there. So that pretty early got us to that attention, that the latency factor of doing SQL calls over a web protocol or doing it over distance in a deployment tool that just ran everything serial, and serial is the word here, just is something that you may not do. When you're having latency on your data send line, you should really try to stack up all of the tasks. So I'm inserting, for instance, record in a table. Who says that I cannot insert those alongside each other? So pretty much what I did was I wrapped down these 800,000 calls to a much simpler model where I was inserting multiple records at once. And after that, this is really bad. Oh, sorry if you cannot see. This is a latency drawing. It shows the latency from the different points, from different points on the internet to other points. What I got in the circle is showing actually the worst points being something like Los Angeles, Hong Kong, or Los Angeles, Singapore. So going to those, you will easily get 200 milliseconds of latency. And we got a lot of customers based out of LA that wants to upload stuff to the Singapore market. So this was something that we need to address. So running bigger statements seemed to get that process down to a level where I was able to deploy at a level of 52 minutes when I had 8,123 calls. These were large calls now, because I blunged up a number of rows, a number of data instances of those. But I got down to 52 minutes. I now saw that the utilization of the network between the database and my publishing server, they were pretty bad. So after doing so, I just fairly paralyzed all of the actions that I could. So parallelize the insertions into a single data voice once at a time, making sure that I could queue up so many tasks like these. And I got this thing down to 8 minutes. But the interesting thing wasn't really the 8 minutes. The interesting thing was that now I was hitting boundaries like network connection speed. So my bandwidth towards the internet was being maxed out when I was at low bandwidth ADSL connections or something. 2 or 3 megabytes, or sorry, megabits of speed. That was easily maxed out, even when running to locations in East Asia. When we were running on really high bandwidth connections, like 100 megabits plus, we were able to see the speed of where we actually hit the limit of what the database was able to cape. So inserting a lot of data, actually, we were hitting that point of where the database server was actually maxed out. So serializing, making bigger chunks, did some of the trick for me, but the one that really is worth taking here is the whole parallelizing of this. If you're inserting multiple rows or multiple instances, make sure to have it parallelized. All of this stuff that you're doesn't need to know the answer of right now, make sure that that runs as asynchronous calls. Cameron actually also ended off very nicely talking about one of the things that you can do in order to breach this gap that you're going to get at some point where a single database becomes the bottleneck. It's database sharding. And as he so gracefully said, database sharding is pretty much striping of databases or striping of tables or striping of data inside of these. There are numerous patterns of sharding and takes on that. We found, or are actually currently testing on different models of this, and the trick or what really seems to be the problem with striping your data across multiple databases is really finding that unique pattern of how to do so. I'm sure that if you're just running customer orders that are running in a numeric scope, yeah, then you could actually take the ones that are running from 1 to 1,000, put them into one database, continue on the next one, keep stacking them up. Things become a bit more complex when you need to fetch data among this. If you do not have IDs that are numeric, how do you want to split this up? How do you want to maintain this? So if you're striving towards two databases, what happens with those two databases run out of a space? There are complex examples on how to do this. There are a lot of patterns found in the community. Chances are that none of this will actually solve your problem. And this is where the headache starts. And this is where you need to spend your architectural hours. Oh, sorry. So going into this, spanning your data across multiple databases is the option for going above that throughput barrier of what a single database is able to do. Address database space limitation just comes as a natural. Since we now have multiple databases, the whole space limitation isn't a problem because we rather want to have this striped on multiple databases than keeping it on a single store. One of the nice things about the Windows Azure platform is you pay on a space consumption basis. So are you running 2 10-gig instances or are you running a single 20-gig instance? That is going to set you back that exact same cost. So ideally, if we don't take the free space header into the picture here, then you should probably be able to run this architecture at the same cost but with a much higher throughput than what you would be able to do in a normal tick. There are lots of studies out there on how fast you can actually get your database if your philosophy is actually just scale up the hardware. you're going to hit a point of where you cannot purchase any more expensive hardware. You're at that limit. And you'll find that the cost of getting that last performance, that will just set you back oh so much more. Going into the sharding is a headache as a architect or as a developer. If you get it cracked, you will be able to scale at a cost which is flat. So just to keep this absolutely simple, what we're speaking about here is having your application that probably through some tears runs toward data in a database server. The trick is somehow defining a model of where you want to split up the data. This is extremely simple. You got data bunch 1 and 2 and data bunch 3 and 4 split on different servers. Add some kind of logic. There are Coplex logic that does this. There are SQL store procedures that can be done for this. I've seen numerous different takes of it. This is where you need to pay your focus. So pretty much the idea of being able to throttle the number of database servers and maintain that size. At some point, two databases probably is going to fill up and you're going to need a third. What are you doing in that instance? I found on testing. I did some testing on this. So I ran a 20 gigabyte database, filled it up with some data, selected upon it. I ran that as a index 100. Did numerous tests on this with the same data, just striped into 10 gigabytes, did some different forms of selecting. I, in average, found that the throughput speed were 97% higher. I have specific select statements that run faster than 200% in index. Like I actually have one that runs 231 from just selecting data. And due to the fact that I'm running smaller index sets on two databases, I'm actually able to get that data faster. Although I am paying for these multiple databases in response times, it does seem to take up that the lower response time seems to be getting some. I'm not expecting that to rise a whole lot, though, when I'm adding the third or the fourth instance of this. But this is pretty good value for money. I'm paying the exact same as the setup on top of this, but I'm now having double the throughput with a little cost of response time. Third major issue final major issue I want to bring up with the databases is you're running on commodity hardware. You're running on a platform as a service application. You're having some high SLAs regarding how great your database or even your web rules run a role. And the level of service is one of the things that are put in an SLA nowadays. So uptime is there. Sometimes you just find yourself connected to a database and in the middle of doing work, it just shuts you off. It isn't on every instance, but it is definitely on more instances than if I ran that on a remote, a regular 2008 server with redundant hardware. I can definitely tell. So that bar seemed to have lowered, that quality bar. The annoying or the good thing is that I can just the second afterwards probably reconnect. I'll probably be running on another database, but I'm able to do that transaction a nanosecond later. So fault tolerance becomes way more important because that some of the faults you will be seeing earlier, but you need to take into consideration that you're running on commodity hardware. Second thing is that you're running in the cloud, so you're probably going to have more transactions that are running over the WAN. than you would earlier, because you would normally probably have the box standing in your on-premise location. And so there we are also upping that limit of fault tolerance. The things that we did initially was we found that a lot of these errors were due to the fact that we were running on VAN. Sometimes we just got connections that were forcibly closed by the database server. And pretty much at that point, I was shaking my head saying, damn, this thing isn't stable at the level that I was expecting. Putting this into consideration, though, I kind of really blame that it's running over LAN or something that's being not stable. That's just a pure fact. That's actually me wanting to do so, and that's actually the whole test of it. Second thing is, I'm being moved from one server to another. The server might close my connection, but that's actually what I wanted when I went into the platform as a service and I went into the multiple setup of databases. So I kind of really sit in the rearview mirror and be unhappy with that because I got exactly what I came for. So going into this made it pretty sure that you need to have, for instance, with your databases, you need to have practices on how you manage these faults. For those of you who are going into that realm, I would very much like to point out SQLcat that has what they call it best practices for building reliable SQL connections. And pretty much they replace your SQL connection object with a SQL Azure connection object. And it's pretty similar to the SQL connection object, although it does take a argument back of fault rules. And with these fault rules comes something like, if the server drops its connections, what do you want to do? Do you want to retry? Do you want to halt this? Do you want to wait for X number of seconds, wait for the X number of seconds that the server says that I should retry? And they actually give you a default set of these values. And the cool thing about these values is this is done by SQL pros, and the values are set to the values that they found usable in real-world scenarios. This is something that has been tested, has been run on different locations, high-latency locations, and it's the sum of all of that experience. So if you guys are going into it, this is a great place to start. First time that you watch your SQL Azure database writes SQL connection, if you have to get something home with you today, go and have a look at this. It will take you 15 minutes, and you'll be running the default configuration, and you'll be having a connection load, which I will claim to be even more stable than if you ran an SQL connection directly towards an on-premise database with these retry rules. So please take that into the consideration while when connecting. I put in 10 minutes for questions. I was hoping that you didn't have none because I was just so explaining. No, please, if anyone has anything that pops to mind, please don't feel afraid to ask me, or I'll gladly be standing outside the door for the next 10 minutes if someone has something. Sure. So the question is, what is the decision base behind me or behind Psycho moving to Azure? I get a lot of feedback in Psycho regarding customer needs, customer third-party things. And initially, we started out by having we don't seriously want to move into the Windows Azure deployment thing because of the database limitations. And that was stuff that we didn't find that a enterprise class content management system would be able to sustain probably on this platform. So initially we just put off with like standard answers to this, until one day that I actually got to this point where there's something intriguing about this. And the intriguing part wasn't actually the scalability for me, and wasn't actually all of the endless thing. The intriguing part for me was the fact that I have seen oh so many solution architect hours in our company being spent assisting partners regarding how to set up, how to deploy solutions like these, multi-geolocation solutions like these. Just being able to totally remove that cost and say, install an application, click on the map wherever you want to go, and get a default take on it. We would then probably have a small notion of rare cases where we need to do something special. But building into this tool is a way where you can extend it, do custom configuration and all of that stuff. So the developers who are doing this actually have a way to add these features and add these special things to whatever is going to happen when the stuff is being deployed, like specific configuration and all of that stuff. So actually, initially, it was just driven by me wanting to cut down on that. And after doing the first internal version of this and showing this off, we actually started braining on the whole value base for us having this ability. And when we summoned up this all on a list, it wasn't really too hard to get this through to higher level and get this up to a reasonable project. So we actually had a fairly small proof of concept on this and just elevated it due to a value prop something like 4 months ago. Any other questions? If not so, then I'll just say thank you for me being getting here and getting to speak to you regarding this. And I hope that the initial things that I stated regarding all of the stuff that I would have loved to get as questions or get someone to speak about, that you feel that you have someone have that in your mind now. If not, please do contact me afterwards and I'll clear those points that you have left. Thank you.